Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the Jaws of Sizing voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Jaws of Sizing, indeed. How are we?
Yes, we're good, thank you. You're looking very masculine there, mate. Very Johnny Bravo. Very square-jawed.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, that's not by accident, my friend. You're a little bit baffled by this, aren't you?
Completely baffled, yes.
And I ask the simple question, do you go to the gym?
I do, occasionally, yes.
Do you do weights?
I do, yes.
So you look to build muscle and define?
That would be correct, yes.
Then why would you ignore your jaw? Why, Matthew? Why would you want to have that weak jaw forevermore?
I mean, I wouldn't like to say my jaw's weak. I hope it's not. But no, I've never worked out my jaw in the gym. Certainly not in the gym, no.
Well, this to me just makes common sense. You go to the gym and you see people working all their muscles and yet not working their jaw. So for me, if I'm going to do a workout, then why would I not include that? So to buy something that allows me, what's it called again? The Jaws of Size? And this isn't an advert for Jaws of Size.
I believe it's called a Jaws of Size. That's what I saw on the box, yes.
I kind of feel like this should be an ideal opportunity for us to have some affiliate with them, and we suddenly now give a 10% code for anyone listening in. Although I can't imagine we'll make many sales, because I get the impression that I might be on my own with this one, because you're not the only person to have questioned me on my decision to get something to work my jaw.
Ah, okay. So I'm not alone here.
You're not. Do you know, I am going to give, and this is a really weak reason, but I'm going to give it. Of course, I did break bones in my face. So actually, building up the face, building up the jaw was something on the back of injuries that I was recommended to do, believe it or not.
Okay, right. So you didn't mention this when I called you out on it, because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And you then gave me a demo, didn't you, of this ball-type contraption that you put between your front teeth. So it's between your front teeth and you basically chew on your front, your top and your bottom teeth.
Yes. It's essentially like having resistance. So if you imagine clamping down, biting down and having resistance when you do so, then naturally you're working all the muscles in your jaw and your face in order to do that. So the idea is you do it to fatigue, and then it does strengthen the muscles. And I was recommended, obviously I broke my cheek and eye, would have been about 15 years or so now ago, and at the time they sort of said stuff like this could certainly help. So that is the real reason. However, now it's just become a thing. I do a workout, then why wouldn't you do a little bit for your jaw?
Fine. I thought this was very much a more of an aesthetic thing, more of a alpha male masculine thing. You trying to look very, I don't know, George Clooney, very Brad Cooper.
Very To Infinity and Beyond.
Buzz Lightyear is more appropriate, yeah.
Yeah, that's part of it as well. That Buzz is my hero. I don't know if I've told you that.
So we've got plenty coming up in the show, haven't we? We'll move on from this. Plenty coming up. Loads of goalkeeping action from the Premier League, the Championship and the rest of the EFL. Some punditry too, of course, and some keeper capers. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Just before we get into the show, Richard, a quick bit of admin you'd like to speak of.
Yes, absolutely. And it's to ask for the generosity of our many listeners, thousands of listeners all over the world, tens of listeners all over the world. But we are very grateful that you're listening in. Look, we love doing this. We've done it now pretty much every week religiously for several years. We fully intend to do it for many, many years to come. Naturally, it becomes more and more difficult. There are production costs. Of course, it does take quite a lot of time. So we are asking for anybody who's willing and open to showing a bit of generosity and is happy to contribute towards what we do, then they can do so. So it is via Patreon, which we have used previously. It won't be one where we'll necessarily put out any extra content or anything like that. It is to help with Between the Sticks, to help with our regular feature interviews that we do and the other bits and pieces as well. So if you do want to help, by all means, please do go to the website, which is
patreon.com/goalkeepersunion.
There you go. And there's a few different options as to how you can help us out. And as I say, anything that you guys can do is very, very much appreciated.
Good words.
Thank you.
Good words. And yes, Patreon obviously was a platform that we started initially in lockdown with the idea of producing extra exclusive content. We did start with that, but unfortunately, things just got a bit busy, didn't they? For both of us.
Life takes over.
Life does take over. So as much as we'd like to still produce that exclusive content, we don't want to continue making promises we can't keep, I suppose.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. But one promise we can keep is Between the Sticks.
Absolutely. That's there. And those podcasts, if you are a Patreon member, will always go on Patreon first. So our Between the Sticks goes on earlier in the day. Our interviews go on a day before. So you will get a little bit of exclusivity.
Absolutely.
Apart from that, you're just part of the Goalkeepers Union, which ultimately is what we all want.
Absolutely. It's growing.
It is indeed. So like Richard just said, any help is greatly appreciated. Head on over to patreon.com/Goalkeepers Union. Okay, we are going to start at the Etihad. What a thriller of a game on Saturday evening. Manchester City 2, Tottenham 3. And Hugo Lloris, question marks again, apparently, for Hugo, Richard. All over the place, some said, not covering himself in glory. Others said, and you've got to expect more. Jamie Carragher said, the opener from Ilkay Gundogan. Talk to me.
Yeah, I heard all the comments and I was listening and I was waiting and I was hoping that hopefully there'd be some form of explanation as to why Hugo Lloris wasn't able to gather the ball. Now, look, first and foremost, yeah, again, Goalkeepers Union, we very much stick up for goalkeepers as and where possible. At the same time, we'll also make it known when we think an error has been made. But the key for me is always that we then break it down and go into a little bit more detail and try and give a little bit more quality. Because all I heard was all of the comments you made there, has to do better, what's the goalkeeper doing, etc., etc. Ultimately, this is a fantastic ball in, first and foremost. Hugo Lloris does the right thing. He gets down, looks to gather it. You've got a player running across at the same time, which, of course, is going to take a bit of your attention. So it's not an easy ball to gather. Let's not forget the fact as well that the conditions have been horrendous over the weekend. So you've got a ball that's being whipped in at pace. You're having to approach the ball, attack the ball, so you've got someone coming across you. You don't know if they're going to get a touch on the ball or not. So you've got one eye on that while trying to gather the ball at the same time. It is a really, really difficult technique. Now, do I think Hugo Lloris can do better? Yes, I think there'll be certainly a part of him. He'll come away from that game and it'll be frustrating. He wasn't able to trap it in that moment, but it is such a difficult technique. And for all of the commentary, all the punditry that we heard, no one actually considered the action that he had to do in order to gather that football. And that was a bit that disappointed me in the punditry, that it was just very, very basic, must do better. Yeah, he's having a tough time apparently at the moment, according to the pundits, and making more mistakes apparently. Just such cliche general terms, in the same way that we're hearing that Jose Sarr, you know, making save after save after save like he's done all season. It's just so general without really going into specifics. That was a bit that frustrated me about this punditry.
On the flip side, an incredible stop at full stretch. Brilliant. From the same man. Milking the applause, though, apparently. Seen plenty of goalkeepers do that, as Carragher.
Yeah, it was. It's interesting, isn't it? You're listening to him talk about the save and you're thinking, surely this is the moment where you just give absolute love for what you've just seen. You know, a brilliant save. The speed at which he moves his feet, the spring he gets, full stretch, to the point where he would have hurt his shoulder a little bit doing this. Certainly, that was how initially I hurt my left shoulder, and it only got worse. But was when you are at full extension like that, and it's almost like you have to dislocate your shoulder to an extent in order to get your hand to the ball, and then you have no control as in how you land. So he will have hurt his shoulder doing this. But it is just a phenomenal, phenomenal save. Yeah, it just felt like the applause that he was getting, the positivity that he was getting was almost through clenched teeth. It felt like it wasn't really free flowing. They did reference the fact that it was a top save, but then soon turned it into a bit of a joke, given that he was milking the applause, etc., etc.
Perhaps he was exercising his jaw, as he was saying, and that's why his teeth were clenched.
Well, look, I've got a contact if he needs it.
Was it, however, that save from Gundogan, was that the best save of the game, or was the save by Edison from Harry Kane better?
It was different. I would say in terms of better, in terms of technique and skill needed, I've got the Lloris save certainly as a better save. This is like, it makes me think of diving, like Tom Daley diving competition where they're graded on difficulty, you see. And I think a ball whipped into the top corner from 30 yards and going at pace, or 20 yards as it was, and being able to get up and tip it away, the amount that's needed in order to make that save. Whereas what was so impressive about the Edison save was the technique. He's effectively got himself into the split position. You know, it was
the conditioning there when you pause it, he's basically doing the splits.
Basically doing the splits, which there's a few parts of this. Firstly, the decision to approach at the speed he did. He got close enough in order to turn it into a block save. The speed at which he gets himself into that split position, and it's his foot that makes the save. That then makes it even more impressive, because if it's a goalkeeper that doesn't quite have the flexibility of Ederson, then they physically can't make the save. And again, that's not necessarily something that will be natural. That will have been something that Ederson will have worked on over and over and over again. And it's something, again, really nice lesson for young goalkeepers. Work on that technique. Work on what your spread save looks like. And that'll be the kind of thing that he will do in the gym over and over. He will do yoga or flexibility exercises in order to allow him to make that save. And he executed it absolutely perfectly.
Sticking with Brazilian goalkeepers, we'll move over to Anfield, Liverpool 3, Norwich City 1. And I'd like to hear the goalkeeper assist klaxon, please. Alisson. Some have said he fell over while he did it, and I guess he did, but still, what an assist for Mo Salah.
But he had to fall over. So this was the bit that impressed me most about this particular assist, was the fact that he needed to get such distance on this kick, a regular side volley wouldn't do it. If you kind of do the regular side volley and you get that little bit of backspin, nice trajectory, this is more of a hybrid between the old school punt and a side volley. It was like a three-quarter, or maybe a quarter volley. There you go, let's call it a quarter volley, because it's slightly lower in order to get a little bit more height and a little bit more distance. And you can see the amount of effort he's had to put in. And actually, look where the ball lands. It's only about 5 yards outside of the penalty box. Like, the distance is unbelievable. And then, of course, the accuracy is phenomenal, and Salah does very, very well to finish it thereafter. But the execution on this kick, I actually feel like he needs to fall over to an extent in order to get the amount of power that he gets to get it to where he needs to get it.
So are you suggesting that he purposefully fell over to do this?
Yeah, watch it again. It's not like he slips. It's not like he slips. He's actually putting so much into this, and he realizes that it's not a, and I'm trying to think how I can put this into words. It's not that he's slicing down on the ball. You consider the regular side volley technique. The ball will be that little bit higher and you chop down on the ball and you get that lovely flight into the striker's chest. You think of the old school NFL punt technique. The ball's right in front of you and you're kicking upwards and it's going up and it's dropping down. This is somewhere in the middle where it is that little bit lower than the side volley, but it's certainly not a straight volley. And for him to get the purchase that he needs, you look, he's reaching for the ball and he's caught it flush where there's no spin on the ball. The ball stays true the entire time until it gets there. And that, because it's such an unusual technique, I believe that's why he lost balance at the end.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Good insight, Richard. At the other end, the equaliser scored by Sadio Mane. Just let's touch on this, because there were two examples of similar goalkeeping technique here. This goal by Sadio Mane beyond Angus Gunn and the goal from Bruno Fernandes, which we'll get onto a bit later, past Ian Melier in the Manchester United victory at Leeds United. Kind of that downward header. In this case, it of course was an overhead kick, but downward and the goalkeeper meeting it on the half volley.
Yeah, both incredibly tough. I think certainly with the Melier one, he's got very little chance, if any chance. I think the Angus Gunn one, he'll be a little bit frustrated. The difficulty with this is picking up the flight of the ball early, because it comes from a very unusual place, given that it's an overhead kick. He needs to pick up the flight of the ball quick, get himself down, judge the bounce. And of course, we saw that so many times this weekend with the conditions being what they were, not being able to judge the bounce quite right. But it just didn't look like he was able to react quite quick enough to get himself down and make the save. So it's one that no doubt he'll look at and maybe feel like he may have been able to react that little bit quicker. Interestingly, the one that I did just want to make the point on, and it's such a tough one, but I think it's worth making the point, was the goal we've just spoke about from Salah, the ball from Alisson. His decision to then approach was interesting, where if you were to freeze frame when Salah takes the touch, he actually takes the touch back inside and almost away from goal ever so slightly. Now, in a perfect world, at this point, given that the defenders are back in play, that might be the moment you then retreat back 3-4 yards, retreat to your goal, and then allow the defenders to do whatever they need to do. It might turn into a one-on-one if Salah then takes on the defender and creates a one-on-one. But in terms of percentages, that would make a little bit more sense, as opposed to trying to then chase the ball. And it's very difficult, because certainly then when he's outside the box and he's trying to tackle Salah effectively, it's going to be very difficult. Salah, being as skillful as he is, he moves it back. And in the end, he just has to beat the two defenders in order to finish. Whereas had Angus Gunn just dropped to his line or dropped a little bit deeper, allowed the defenders to do their job, it would have created a very different scenario. Now, it's always a very tough one to talk about, because of course if he does that, it creates a completely different scenario, which is easy to say when a goal has been scored, because of course hindsight is that much easier at that point. But certainly I think in terms of percentages, the moment that something like that happens and you know you've got defenders there, as a goalkeeper, as a rule of thumb, that allows you to drop that little bit deeper and to protect your goal.
Moving over to Molineux, Wolves 2, Leicester City 1. Jose Sarr, you mentioned him earlier, solid again. A few good saves in this one. First half, there were two in quick succession, which I thought were worth flagging, both because you speak about this a lot. Sometimes it's the luck where the ball ends up, and on both occasions, he's parried into areas where Leicester players were not, and so no rebound resulted in what probably would have been a goal had they been there. And the two Wolves goals, Roy Keane criticising Kasper Schmeichel for the first, the classic, he got his hand to it, so he should save. And the second goal, offside or not offside?
Yeah, well, let's start with Jose Sarr, because I touched on it earlier. He's got a wonderful narrative that is surrounding him at the moment. And in fairness, deserved. I'm really impressed with him. Excellent parry to his right-hand side. Just the awareness of the two players that were there and getting a real firm hand between the two. You know, this wasn't by accident that this ended up between the two opposing players. But similarly, then had a parry that wasn't so good, which thankfully for him was cleared by a defender, and then nothing else is said. And I guess that's the bit of goalkeeping where we'll talk about luck. And ideally, you want to minimise the amount of luck you need. But it's nice every now and then where perhaps you don't quite get the parry you desire, but someone is there to help clear up. There's a lovely bit of distribution we saw as well, where he claimed a high ball, came out, brilliant side volley to put one of his players free. But he's certainly looking very, very good, growing in confidence with every single game. And again, he was very good in this game. A good solid late parry as well, shot from distance, just very safe play, parried it out wide. And the Kasper Schmeichel, yeah, for me, the first one, it's quite simple. He was unsighted. In fact, both goals, he was unsighted, which therefore for the second one, for me, how that isn't an offside baffles me. But again, this is where you've got all outfield pundits looking at it from one point of view, which is we want more goals scored. Effectively, that was the commentary that surrounded this particular play, is, oh well, it'd be a shame if that wasn't given because such and such was stood in an offside position. Well, no, you can see Kasper Schmeichel clearly is having to lean round the corner in order to see the ball, which is going to impact the speed at which you can dive. Does he save this if he has a clear sight of the ball? I think he possibly does. I mean, it's a shot from, what, 25 yards? It's flying in the corner, don't get me wrong, but we've seen Kasper Schmeichel make saves like this before, so it does change the entire scenario. And the first one, I just feel for him a bit in that it has come around body, so he's only going to see it really, really late where he's gone with the dive, and this all happens in a split second. Unfortunately, he's just ever so slightly too low, and of course by the time he sees it, he's not quite able to get his hand up enough, and it kind of goes over his hand. But again, the fact that he's unsighted is the reason it makes the technique so difficult.
Can we also talk about the last 60 seconds or so in this game? Fabulous is the word I'll use to describe this, because what entertainment. Kasper, like you said, a good save from Jose Sarr. Kasper up for the corner, and then Kasper and Sarr meeting head to hand on.
Yes, indeed. And Jose Sarr towering over him to get a punch in. And then you've got Kasper running back. I mean, we always love goalkeepers running back. In fairness, he looked a lot better than most, I have to give him that. Certainly a lot better than I did when I was running back after a call, which I did several times in my career. I think once I actually lost the ball on the halfway line and they scored. So no, credit to him for that. But yeah, it was a very, very entertaining last minute or so.
Before we move on to the next game, I have a question for you. And that question, Richard, is which goalkeeper has had more touches than any other goalkeeper in the Premier League this season, and also the most throwouts?
Oh, interesting. Well, the fact that I think we're going to move on to the Leeds-Manchester United game makes me think it's probably one of these two goalkeepers. So I'm guessing Iam Elio.
I've given you the running order, haven't I? Gosh, what an error. Yes. Iam Melier. Now, I can't take credit for the research here. This is from a really good article in the Times yesterday morning, Jonathan Northcroft, and he was just looking into what Melier had done this season. A few other interesting stats from this is that in terms of the average length of pass, only Alisson, Edison and Edouard Mendy play it shorter than Melier have this season, which is also interesting because yesterday I was watching in what was utterly horrendous conditions, but also great to watch. You loved it. You loved the sodden pitch. It really was a throwback. But of the 12 long balls that Melier attempted yesterday, only three were accurate, Leeds, on the other hand, have not kept a clean sheet since November, and in their last 11 games, they've conceded 32 goals. But I think it's important that that shouldn't be a slight on Melier. If you remember when they played Manchester City and lost 7-0, they also lost 4-1 to Arsenal. On both of those occasions, he was actually one of the better players. And we flagged the brilliant save from Solomon Rondon last week in the 3-0 defeat to Everton. His performance, however, on this one, good save from Cristiano Ronaldo. The goal conceded from Bruno Fernandes, you've already spoken about. He was also criticised on commentary for the winner from Fred. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, firstly, talking about the save, the recovery save that he made from Cristiano Ronaldo, it was incredible as you're watching it in that for all of the commentary, his name wasn't mentioned. It was bizarre because it was a really good recovery save. Turned in, onto his line, spread well, hits his leg. Yeah, excellent save. And yet they watched it, what, 5 replays, 6 replays? And not one moment did they even acknowledge that the goalkeeper had actually made the save. But it was a top, top save. For me, no chance on the Fernandes header. It's so close in, bullet header down into the ground. Yeah, he gets a hand to it, the inside of his forearm, but it would have been a fantastic save. He could have clawed it out. So certainly no expectation to make that save. And then no, in terms of the winner, no chance. This comes back to the idea that you take up a true position and at times you will get beaten on your near post, especially when they are, what, 10 yards from you and they absolutely rifle it into the top corner. Not a great deal you can do there. You know, it would be an incredible reaction save if he gets a hand to it. But again, it just goes back to this tired narrative of getting beaten at your near post. But of course, if someone's absolutely hammering the ball in the way they do, then very little chance for me.
We won't dwell on this, but this also goes back to, doesn't it, the fact that outfielders don't seem to receive the same type of analysis. Now, there was the goal scored by Rodrigo, which made it 2-1. The cross comes shot. We won't dwell on that because not really anything David De Gea can do there, well, even though Garrett, go on.
Let's dwell on that because okay. Of the Gary Neville comment. Like, oh, he won't be happy there. He won't be happy there. I mean, God, what won't he be happy with? He won't be happy that a cross has flown over his head into the top corner at pace, absolutely unsavable. And I'm just waiting when he's watching the replay for Neville to correct himself.
Well, he didn't correct himself when Anthony Elanga missed a glorious chance to kill the game off for Manchester United. Now, again, this isn't something that you really want to dwell on too much, but that's where a striker, an attacker, should be doing better, if we're going to coin the cliche, should be doing better there. But no, just didn't get it round Ian Melier enough. Just hit it slightly too close to Melier. No, it was an awful, awful finish. Yes, he then killed the game off later and United won the game 4-2. So he did score and put it right and make amends. But there was no, always made amends for missing his chance earlier. It was a clear, gilt-edged opportunity for Elanga to finish the game off for United. Plenty of time, laid off beautifully by Jadon Sancho. Acres of space now, whether it was the pitch and taking the touch on the dodgy pitch, whether it was the positioning of Melier, whether it was the pressure of the situation, that's absolutely fine. Whether it was experience, lack of experience in those types of situations, although, what, 19, 20, Elanga, compared to 21 years old, Melier, I think he is. Whether it was all of those, absolutely fine. But if you are going to afford outfielders that leniency, then you need to do the same for goalkeepers. In this case, nothing was mentioned. Go on.
Well, yeah, you're bang on. I mean, a great example, actually, we just spoke about it, would have been Lloris. You know, the fact that he makes an error, then makes an unbelievable save, or what's considered an error, and then makes an unbelievable save, yet you know that people will bring up that error for weeks to come now. If he makes another so-called error in the coming weeks, they'll no doubt hark back to the fact that he could have done better with this particular goal. Yet, as you mentioned, no one will ever mention the fact that it was a terrible, terrible finish from Elanga, and it will never be spoken about in the same way. And again, I know I'm a bit of a broken record on this, but I just think it comes back to perspective. It's always the outfield pundit, which is giving it from their point of view, which is, of course, when you're a striker, you're taught, you know, keep having shots at goal. Doesn't matter if you miss. Keep being brave enough to get there. And yet there isn't a similar narrative that follows goalkeepers. No one says keep making mistakes. Doesn't matter if you make mistakes. Keep trying to do the right thing. That's what it should be. And that's what goalkeeper coaches say to goalkeepers. Keep being brave enough to come for your crosses. Keep being brave enough to put yourself into positions to make the saves. And of course, errors will happen from time to time, but that's absolutely okay. But you're bang on. It's just the way in which the punditry will be for that outfield player as opposed to that goalkeeper. And again, I'll just repeat what I said earlier in the podcast. It's always done with very little insight, very little knowledge. It's just a general statement about how a goalkeeper should do better. Once again, please tell us how the goalkeeper can do better.
To clarify the stance here, we're not suggesting in any way that we want pundits to start hammering up-and-coming players and bright prospects like Anthony Elanga. That's not what we want them to do. Don't do that, but then also don't criticise goalkeepers in the same manner. That's what we're asking for.
That's it. Nicely summed up.
And let's finish on a positive here with David De Gea. We'll go back to him because he has now kept as many clean sheets in the Premier League as Peter Schmeichel, 128. Just needs one more to break the record for United in the top flight since 1992, when apparently football began or was reborn, because he did keep that clean sheet against Brighton in midweek, and he also made one heck of a save.
Unbelievable. Yeah, one of the saves of the season. I know there's already been so much said about this save, but just to break it down, retreats well to his line, good set position, the power, the speed in order to get up there. Look, we talk about talk about goalkeepers that have the X factor, for want of a better phrase, that David De Gea has always had that. You know, certainly this type of save, there's not many goalkeepers in the world that can make the save. You can probably count them on one hand. And yeah, he's certainly one of them. And this is, again, I know we keep repeating it show after show, but it's really, really good to see David De Gea playing at the level that he is.
It is time for the EFL overview, and starting in the Championship, where it was all change, please. Senny Dieng back in for QPR at the expense of David Marshall. Without a win in three prior to the game, it's now four, but they did draw one apiece with Hull. Matty Ingram stretched off in that one. We'll speak about that in a minute, no doubt. Harvey Cartwright on for his pro debut at 19. Jed Steer, an eventful first EFL start for Luton. An early scare, a good save from Andy Carroll. Six saves required in total. James Shea on the bench now for the Hatters. Dan Bentley, he enjoyed his first start since December the 18th at Bristol City. Nine saves in total for him. 3 points against an in-form Middlesbrough. And Lee Nichols, yet again, looking really good for Huddersfield, as did they in a win at Leaders Fulham. Don Goodman claiming Marek Rodak will feel he could have done better with the first. And then the penalty, which, well, go on, over to you.
Yeah, let's start there because, yeah, I can sense this with Marek Rodak at the moment that the commentators have turned ever so slightly, but there's very little he can do for me. I mean, the first one is hammered in through his legs from, what, 4 yards, 5 yards? And again, it's just real basic punditry, because all they've done is they've seen the fact that it's hit the goalkeeper and it's ended up in the net and he's ended up in a pile on the floor, and instantly come to the conclusion that maybe he'll feel he could have done a little bit better, which is just madness. But again, it's such lack of knowledge of the position, unfortunately. And then I think
the issue with this one is because he got a touch, like you said, 4 yards out. If he doesn't get a touch and that just zips right through his legs, no one mentions it. Similar in a way to the winner from Hakim Ziyech for Chelsea against Crystal Palace at the weekend. Inside the 6 yard box, great finish on the volley, zipped under Jack Butland, through his legs, into the back of the net. No one says a thing. Great goal. If that's the same here and Rodak doesn't get a touch, no one says a thing.
No, you're bang on. And that's it. They don't actually consider it logically, you know, and actually think of what Marek Rodak has to do in that moment. Well, of course, he has to set ready for the shot, which he does. And you're not going to set with your legs together. So you're going to set with your legs ever so slightly apart, shoulder width, maybe slightly wider than that, depending on the technique that you adopt. And if the ball is fired between your legs, you consider the action, the physical action you need to do to close your legs in what is, I say, a split second. We're talking, what, 0.1 of a second, if that, that you have in order to close your legs and try and make the save. It is physically impossible. So there's absolutely nothing he can do. There's no human on earth that can move their limbs this quickly in order to make the save. Yet a very basic pundit will look at this and just see that it's hit the goalkeeper, it's ended up in the goal, therefore, oh, the goalkeeper might be a little bit disappointed, might feel they could have done more with that. No, they won't. Consider what's just happened, like, assess it. Use your football intelligence to assess that position. Even if you're not a goalkeeper or an outfield player, consider the ball being fired at you from so close and you trying to control the ball. It's impossible. It's physically impossible. And I think that's the bit that frustrated me about this particular bit of commentary, in that I don't think he's used any common sense or intelligence. It's just going back to a blanket analysis that you'll often see, and that if it doesn't look great, then therefore the goalkeeper may be able to do better. Similarly with the penalty, you actually consider what's happened there. The goalkeeper's coming out to collect the ball, and if someone's coming in from a right angle, yes, you might get a bit of an idea in your peripheral vision, but then once you've attempted to come and get the ball, how often do we see it that whoever gets there first gets the foul? So if the goalkeeper gets there first, he might get the foul, because if he collects it and the player collides into him, then it will be a foul on the goalkeeper. And essentially that's all that's happened here. He just wasn't quite able to get there quick enough. But I did even hear the comment that he could be a bit braver. What do you mean he could be braver? Like, how? He's gone to collect the ball. The player's knocked into him, which has twisted him. What more can he do? It's a penalty. I've got no doubt about that, and I agree with that entirely. But again, I don't think there's a lot more he could have done other than make the decision to stay at home. But in that moment, you've got a 50-50 challenge. If you're an outfield player, and I suppose, well, speak in terms that outfield pundits might understand, if it's a 50-50, do you go for it or not? Or do you pull out? A lot of the time, you will go for it. Of course you will. And it's the same for a goalkeeper. If it's a 50-50, more often than not, you will go for the ball with the confidence that you can get there first.
I didn't expect you to be as worked up. That's not what I intended for this podcast, but I feel like that blood is boiling again. I feel like that heart rate on your whoop is going to be rocketing. Well,
it just frustrates me. It just frustrates me when goalkeepers get criticism like he has done here, and it is unjust. Because, look, we all know you're going to get criticised for so much as a goalkeeper. We've already spoke about it. The fact that now seemingly the standard has risen when it comes to pundits and how they talk about goalkeepers. So when you do something that isn't your fault, it does frustrate me when pundits will gather together. It feels like one says it, someone else agrees, and before you know it, it becomes common knowledge that he could have done better, to the point where I did see some of the reports on Marek Rodak, and they're giving him a 4, giving him a 5, you know, looking shaky, could have done better. And it's like, no, you've just listened to some really poor punditry and you've now taken that on as your opinion. Don't do that. Have the bravery to form your own opinion of the situation. I guess that's my point.
Do you know what I think we need? You've been speaking about goalkeeping punditry for a long time, of course, and you've even said you're not saying that you're the man that should be on Sky Sports, but I think we should start a Richard Lee workshop or a Goalkeepers Union workshop where you get them in an office and almost do like a keynote speech.
Oh, I'd love to.
And deliver a presentation to them.
I'd love to break it down. I'd love to have Gary Neville in a classroom, and let's look at that De Gea situation and let's ask some logical questions. Okay, so the ball's crossed in, it's gone in the far post. So Gary, where do you think David De Gea should stand? So you agree with his starting position? Yes, you do, because he's what? 2 yards off, 3 yards off, quite advanced, ready to come for the cross. You're happy with where he is now. Do you think he can move his feet quicker? No, because he's got the quickest feet in the world and he's moving very, very well. Where's the ball ended up? In the top corner, Gary. That's correct. It has ended up in the top corner. At what pace? 60 miles an hour, give or take? Yes. So what time have you got between where he is now and getting in the top corner? What are we saying? 0.6, 0.7 of a second? So now do you think a human can move from that position there and somehow get themselves into the far top corner and get a hand onto the football and claw it out? No, you don't. No, you don't. So then why have you said he'll be disappointed with it? Like, that's what I'd love to do. That's the classroom. Classroom over. Took 30 seconds.
Class
dismissed. Yeah, I am worked up today. I am worked up. The more I think about it, it's just the lack of intelligence. It's that. That's all it is. It's as simple as that.
The likelihood of Gary Neville, one, sitting in a classroom and listening to you is very low. And two, even if he did, the likelihood that he would accept any wrongdoing or any blame.
Oh, no chance.
Absolutely.
No,
it's never going to happen in a million years.
I mean, we've all seen his tweets. You've got absolutely no chance.
Let's just mention Matty Ingram. Not great to see this. It looked like a really awkward fall. The club have come out since and said that he is responding, he is communicating, so that's good news.
Yeah, it really is. That was horrendous. I know the game was delayed for a long, long time, and he's been brilliant lately. I know we touched him once or twice in the pod. You know, certainly, you know, he's been excellent. So do wish him well. As you say, the early feedback coming out of Hull City was reasonably positive. So hopefully, that's continued.
Into League One, Jonathan Mitchell with a smart penalty save from Barry Bannon. Doncaster, however, slumping to a 3-1 home defeat to Sheffield Wednesday. Ipswich, they beat Burton. Ben Garrett, possibly, don't know what you think of this one, a little slow in getting down to Caden Jackson's opener. Christian Walton, another clean sheet earned with a couple of decent stops too. Dimitar Mitov also maintaining a clean sheet. Sharp reactions to deny Colby Bishop in a win over Accrington. And one more, we've had a WhatsApp in. Mike Cooper also a clean sheet, but more so because of the WhatsApp. That's why I'm going to mention this. It was sent in to us from someone by the name of RH, who says, as a Plymouth fan, I can confirm I've never heard anyone call him Cooper Man. Do you remember that?
I do. That's right. It was said as if it was a well-known thing. Like, it's Cooper Man, of course. So when I heard it, I did actually wonder. I did think, all right, maybe that is just what he's known as.
So it's Jonathan Pearce, wasn't it, when they played, yeah, when Plymouth played at Chelsea in the FA Cup. So RH has said, yeah, never heard anyone call him Cooper Man. It's always Coops.
Ah, Coops. Well, I was thinking we need to coin one for you, like Beetle Boy.
Sorry, what?
I mean, look, I'm just thinking, if we're going to go down this route and the something that has a nice ring to it, you know? Like, I know you're beads, aren't you? That's what I'm called, beads. But it's just a bit, I don't know, it's...
You don't have to say that with such disdain, well, mate. It's just what people tend to call
me. I know.
Oh, I know you're rich. Oh, you're rich. Oh, God. Well,
that's not great either. But I think, like Cooper Man, in fairness, I actually prefer Cooper Man to Coops, I think. Like, beads is very... Beetle Boy is better than beads, in my opinion.
I don't think anyone's ever called me Beetle Boy in my life.
No, do you like it or?
No, I don't. Please, okay, don't start it.
All right.
Horrendous. All right.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Beetlejuice.
Yeah, I've had that quite a few times.
You've had that, yeah. I thought you might have.
Okay,
yeah.
We'll get back to goalkeeping, right, shall we?
Talking about that. Yeah, so Ben Garrett, I agree, and I've watched this a couple of times. I can't figure out whether he is a little bit unsighted. Of course, in League One, League Two, you don't necessarily get the same camera angle, so you can't watch it five different ways. But he just looked a little bit slow in getting down. So the only thing I can think is that he didn't quite see the ball as it left the opposing player's foot. But yeah, he didn't quite get his feet right or get an explosive dive away, and it did seem to beat him a little bit more easily than perhaps he would have liked. The other ones to mention, felt for Toby Savin, one of those bobbly, horrible, windy, terrible pitch, and he just wasn't able to gather it. And of course, they scored the rebound. We've all had several of them in our career. Good save from Dimi Mitov, sharp low to his left. Christian Walton, once again, another clean sheet, and he really is going from strength to strength. Looked really, really strong once again. And as you mentioned, a good save from the penalty from Johnny Mitchell. One where he had to improvise a little bit, it's fair to say. He's gone full stretch to his left, realised the ball's coming back down towards the middle, and managed to get a foot to it. And it really is an excellent save. Clean Sheet Club. And once again, we arrive at that point in the show. Of course, it is time for Clean Sheet Club. And we start in the Premier League. Ben Foster recycling another shutout. Nick Pope, one in his first 12, five in his last eight. Edouard Mendy, buenvenue to 2022. Fraser Forster, welcome to 21-22. Simon Moore, how do you save it? How do you save it? Ryan Allsop, once Allsop, you can't stop. Jed Steer, wheelie good league debut. Wes Fodringham, 6-7. James Trafford, as cool as a Cucumbrian. Dimitar Mitov, script written like Steinbeck. Jack Stevens, back on the board. Michael Cooper, super par, Cooper par. Christian Walton, four on the spin. Liam Roberts, this is getting better and better and better. Jojo Wallacott, twos. Carl Rushworth, twos two. Danny Rogers, hat-trick. James Belshaw, pour that man a quaddy body.
Very good, Richard, very good.
Well, I don't know if it was very good. There's a few I need to flag up here. So, I like the Ryan Allsop one. Once Allsop, you can't stop. Jed Steer, wheelie good league debut. Ah, Steer, yep, clever. Fotheringham, 6-7. James Trafford, as cool as a Cucumbrian, very clever, good. Steinbeck, who's Steinbeck?
John Steinbeck, very established author from back in the day. That's actually, that's quite a tenuous link. Dimitar Mitov was born in a town called Montana, I believe, in Bulgaria. And John Steinbeck wrote and spoke quite fondly of Montana, but Montana in North America. So very different, but
wow,
a tiny link.
And you expect our listeners, please, I want to know, if any listener heard that the first time around, I was like, oh, that's what that is. Please let us know, because it sounds like you and Matt Beadle were meant to be.
The musical reference, you got that right.
So super pa pa the coup pa pa. No,
I mean, please do that again. What was?
Well, I don't know what that is. Michael Cooper super pa. Was it close or not?
That sounds like you're doing the whole you do run, yeah, run, that's you what do I was run, thinking. Run.
No, it's not that, is it? What is it then?
Well, that one's just an ABBA track, the Super Trooper. You know that one, but I was more focused on the Simon Moore reference.
Simon Moore, Moore, Moore. How do you save it? How do you save it? Go on. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good.
Yep. Good stuff. Good stuff. The resplendent Rachel Stevens. Why not? Why not put a bit of Rachel Stevens in the Goalkeepers Union podcast? Although, I actually think that might be football related. Way back in the day, you know how Sky do those promos ahead of a new season, a new campaign or something? I think that was used back in the early noughties, maybe late 90s, not sure. Anyway, also ex-S Club, so I know you like your S Club.
Of course, yeah, perfect. Match made in heaven.
The table.
Yes.
Top of the pile still and extending his lead. Looks like he could be bringing it home with 16, Liam Roberts in 31 games. In second place, joint second, Edison and Luke McGee, both on 14. Edison in 25, Luke McGee on 31. We should reference, by the way, Luke McGee, January Player of the Month for League Two. So we didn't bring that up. That's very well done from him. And in third spot, joint third spot, is Ross Doohan and Lee Nichols. Doohan with 13 in 27, and Nichols with 13 in 31.
Well, there you go. Really is hotting up, especially as we get into March and you kind of feel we're in the final furlong then. You know, I do wonder what's going to win it this year. I was thinking this ordinarily, like 1 in 2 is obviously huge. Like Edison's 1 in 2, obviously Liam Roberts is better than 1 in 2. So is it going to be sort of 22, 23? Is that realistic?
Well, yeah, I think so, because last season, I think it was either 22 or 25. I want to say, I can't remember which number, but it was Vaslav Hladký, wasn't it? Brilliant season at Salford, now at Ipswich. So he got plus 20. I think it was 22 or 25. Can't remember, but it was within that region. So, yeah, I'm guessing it will be somewhere near that.
We shall see.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
A few keeper capers to finish, and a lot of them, Richard, focusing on penalties. The first one is from the game involving Nantes and PSG. So firstly, the penalty save from Neymar in that match from Alban Lafont.
He made a lot of saves in that match, it's fair to say. And the penalty save was very good from a goalkeeper's point of view. I know that Neymar's always going to get stick for a penalty like this. But the whole thing with Neymar is that he watches the goalkeeper to see where the goalkeeper goes. Now, the moment the goalkeeper hasn't moved and he's ever so slightly overcovered the left-hand side, a little bit of gamesmanship there. So I think it's just excellent goalkeeping. Like, of course, this goes back to what we spoke about throughout the whole show about outfield pundits giving a different perspective, which isn't overly positive from Neymar's point of view. But I think from the goalkeeper, to be able to stay still, the mind games that he's adopted by taking up the position he has and then to react after the ball's kicked makes it a very comfortable save.
And he did make a lot of saves, like you said. And the reason that I sent those to you was because, as a result of that performance, he became only the 13th player to earn a perfect 10 out of 10 from L'Équipe, the French newspaper. They beat PSG 3-1. So only 13 players in the history of football have been given a maximum rating by L'Équipe. Now, they are notorious for being quite stingy with their ratings, so they're more likely to criticise you than actually laud you. But on this occasion, Lafont has been given the old 10 out of 10.
Well, there you go. Well, I think you're currently on for a 10 out of 10 on this podcast. Been your best performance for a long time. So it's just whether you can finish strongly.
Two goalkeepers, by the way, in that 13 from L'Équipe. Two other goalkeepers. Okay. So he was the third goalkeeper.
I'm going to go with Lama.
No, not Lama.
Okay. Barthez.
No, not Barthez. Don't have to be French, by the way.
No, but I'm just thinking that gives... I'm guessing one of them is French.
One of them is French, yeah.
So... No, I'm lost. Go on.
Bruno Martini and Lars Windfield. So Lars Windfield, I wasn't aware of. That was in a game in 1997 for Aarhus versus Nantes. Also Nantes, interesting. Bruno Martini. I actually think I've seen him play. I think I saw him play for Montpellier against Marseille in the late 90s.
Yeah, I saw him. I remember he took a really bad knock. He was shaken, but wasn't stirred.
You've been thinking about that the minute I said Bruno Martini.
Yes.
A player apologising, this is also in France, for scoring a Panenka. So this is Gaëtan Laborde of Rennes apologising to Gauthier Gallon of Troyes.
Yeah, it's quite a sweet moment, this, isn't it? It's, I mean, look, this just makes me think of when you're in training. The thing is, ordinarily, you would never get an apology. You know, if they try and chip you and they score, you don't get the apology. So, I don't know. I don't know how I'd take it. If someone's done a Panenka, scored, then came and apologised, I'd be like, you're taking the mick a little bit here.
Yeah, you tell him where to go, surely. I don't know why he feels the need. Don't do it if you're then going to apologise. Have the courage of your convictions.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I was forced to. My manager told me. Like, no, you've chosen to do it. And now you've scored. It's a little bit patronising.
Over in Greece, meanwhile, a goalkeeper by the name of Grigorios Athanasiou scored a hat-trick of penalties. This was for Pavlos Melas, and they beat Eitos Vasilikon. It was 3-0. This is the fourth tier of Greek football. 3-0, he scored all three.
Am I right in thinking that José Chilavert scored a hat-trick once?
You are, Richard. This is going to be my next question.
Ah, well, there you go. I have preempted it, because that just rang a bell.
You have.
That's the only other time I can think of where a goalkeeper scored a hat-trick. But look, credit to him. I thought the penalty technique was excellent.
It was. Almost adopted a kind of Jorginho hop, skip and jump, although kind of quarter committed to it. But always good to see a goalkeeper scoring penalties. Just a couple of final bits to clear up. Alan McGregor, 100th appearance in European club competitions. That was in a brilliant win for Rangers at Dortmund, 4-2 in midweek. 41 clean sheets in that time, so props to him. And let's finish with Joe Hart and a lovely message on Twitter to a six-year-old who apparently had been on the receiving end of bullies, school bullies in the playground, who said he was too small to be a goalkeeper. So Joe Hart sent him a tweet just saying, don't worry about them, just do it because you love it.
Yeah, I enjoyed this from Joe Hart. We're seeing more and more of this kind of stuff, I feel, at the moment, which is good. This is, again, where so many goalkeepers, and Joe Hart in particular, you know, such a hero to so many, has that ability to do that. And it was very, very genuine, very heartfelt. So good on him for doing that.
Okay, bit of an erratic podcast, I think, today, but thoroughly enjoyable nonetheless, as always.
Indeed, likewise, thoroughly enjoyable. I got a little bit stressed during the middle, so I just want to apologise for that, because I think I told you I wear my little heart rate monitor thing, and it did start going a little bit crazy during the middle, but I'm a lot more relaxed now and looking forward to the rest of my day. So thank you, Matthew.
No, thank you, Richard. This has been...
No, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.
Away!